It is time for this month's Symphony Spotlight, where I highlight the careers of symphony musicians across the nation. And joining me this morning is Galen McCormick, who plays bass with the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra up in Rochester, New York. Galen, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
Oh, well, good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
Now, what convinced you to pursue a career in music?
Well, when I was younger, I fell in love with this cello player who was on a TV show called Fame. It was on back in the early 80s, and she was this gorgeous girl who played cello. And I know I don't play the cello, but my father noticed how much I would love when she came on TV. And he finally said, like, why don't you go down to the orchestra room and tell them that you want to play cello? And I said, oh, I don't know. I was really, really shy, but I went down and I finally, I got up the gumption to say to them, I really want to play the cello. And they said, oh, it's really late in the fall semester, so we actually don't have any cellos left. You can play the bass, and then next year you can play the cello. And I just loved it. I loved the sound, and I had a great orchestra teacher who was so great and informative and inspiring. It was just really easy for me, and I just took to it really naturally. And after a while, I was like, wow, this is just really fun. Playing music is sort of like putting a puzzle together all the time. And I thought, I can get paid to do this kind of puzzle work all the time. Like, why wouldn't I want to do that? And so I kind of fell into it, luckily. And then, you meet the most amazing people when you work in music. You meet these people who are crazy and wonderful and intellectual and creative and wonky and wonderful. So once I realized that you could actually do this for a living, I was all in.
Well, the cello is kind of close to the double bass, obviously sitting near you guys often in the orchestra. So you're in the bass section, one that doesn't necessarily get a lot of attention from concert goers, but you guys are pretty important. So how do you feel about your section interacting with the rest of the strings?
We are really important, and it's funny because we are super overlooked by the audience, even though we're the biggest thing on the stage. But I love our role because we're sort of invisible. We're like the floor you walk on all the time. You don't think about us, but man, if we weren't there, you would miss us. we're giving the solid foundation. We're giving the rhythm that you really need, along with the percussion and often with the low brass. So we're giving the things that you need, and I feel like we play this really vital role in supporting the melody. So it's a role that I really enjoy playing, but it's true that we're often really not appreciated from an audience point of view.
Now, you started out your career freelancing a bit and then playing with the Erie, Pennsylvania Philharmonic, the Binghamton Philharmonic, and the Albany Symphony in New York, then settled back in Rochester, which, by the way, is where Galen went to school, back in 1995. You've been there for a while. How would you explain to our listeners your career track?
Well, I was freelancing for a while, and when I came to Rochester, that was a part-time job, because Rochester has a situation where we have a full-time string section, and then the back few stands are part-time strings. So I had one a part-time job, and those other jobs you talked about, Erie and Binghamton, are a few hours each from here. So I was young enough and energetic enough that I was willing to drive to all of those other jobs and kind of put that all together. And I was really lucky when I moved to Rochester that there was another person in the bass section who was teaching a lot who decided to leave the year after I came here, and she dovetailed with me. She asked me to team teach with her for a year and then gave me her studio. So I didn't mean to stay in Rochester. It was only supposed to be a temporary stop to stay here. My career trajectory was going for a much bigger job. But it turned out I really loved teaching, and I actually really loved this thing of going from one orchestra to another and having a different stand partner and a different conductor and doing different kinds of repertoire. So while I was in my 20s, it was actually really great to be doing that. I was really lucky, though, that I won the full-time position with the orchestra when I did, because after a while, it does get really tiring, getting in the car every week and sort of making your home in one city and then another and another and trying to keep up with the other kinds of work that you're doing.
Right. And you spent a little bit of time on that audition circuit. So tell us a little bit about the stresses involved with auditioning for different orchestras. And you now teach a class on this, on audition taking.
I do. I was so happy to be asked by Eastman, our alma mater, to teach this class called How to Win an Orchestra Audition. The audition process is really stressful, as you know. you're going into this room blind because they put a screen up now to separate you from the people listening to you, which as a female player in an area that's mostly men, I'm really, really grateful for that screen. And it's stressful, you know, you don't see them, you don't know what they're thinking, you can't gauge by any kind of facial reaction how they're reacting to your playing. And you do this multiple times. I always like to say it's like the Miss America pageant. You go round after round until you wind up with one winner at the end of the day. And it can be exhausting. I remember when I won my job in Erie, I think I started at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I think I won at 11 o'clock at night and signed my contract and then went to bed. It's just exhausting. So it's a long process. For most of us, we spend anywhere from 6 to 10 weeks, you know, preparing for that one day. And you can play anywhere from 1 hour to, like I said, all day long for a committee until they finally winnow it down to that one person who gets the job.
So tell us a little bit about how you teach young students about auditioning and your overall teaching in general. I mean, you do a lot of it, don't you?
I do a lot of teaching. I'm really actually very grateful. This has become a huge part of my life, and it's something that brings me a lot of joy. The class that I'm teaching is actually radically different from the kind of teaching I do with my instrument. The class where we're working on orchestra auditions is mostly on performance anxiety. So we're working on how to control that through a series of mindful practices. And we're working on a book that Don Green wrote called Performance Success. And he's a guy who worked with Navy SEALs, Olympic athletes. He's worked with high-end golfers. And believe it or not, one of the bass players in the RPO actually met him and convinced him to start working with musicians about 20 years ago. And so now this guy actually works at Juilliard and coaches musicians because we're essentially high-end athletes of the very small muscles. And so we work through that book and we do mock auditions, you know, where we have a screen up and I bring in a panel of people from the orchestra and we go through all the paces of doing an audition and I'll tape them and they'll get feedback so that really we can put as much stress on them as possible and make it as close to the real situation as possible. And then we'll do debriefs with each other and we'll do some of it live and some of it online. And that's been really great for them. And it's been great for me to do this kind of a classroom scenario because it's totally different from lesson teaching.
So you mentioned before that the bass is kind of overlooked by a lot of people, and they probably would be surprised to know that you've actually written a set of books on bass bow technique. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, I've been teaching bass now for almost 25 years, and while I was in graduate school in Pittsburgh with Jeff Turner, I was down at Carnegie Mellon, he invited me to work with some of the young students there, and I had been doing some work with young students in Rochester, and I was talking with him one day. I said, you know, what are you using for this particular problem with the bow? I said, I'm always fumbling around and trying to figure out how to teach it. He said, I know. I use this book, but it's not in print, and I use that, but I kind of make up my own exercises. And we looked at each other, and we're like, why don't we just come up with something? Why don't we put something out there? Because why doesn't this exist yet? So this was really, I always want to give him credit. He had the idea, and I had the time at that point to do the writing. So we started this project together, and I kept going with it. And I just saw this void in the teaching material for our instrument, and I kept running with it from there. It turned into a three-book series. I approached my dream publisher, and I just went for it. I didn't really continue to say yes because I didn't think I was really anybody to them. And I lucked out. They not only said yes to the first book, I pitched them three books in a row and they said, okay, that sounds great. So I set to work on it. And it's been wonderful. It's been pretty successful. And it's really helped me as a teacher to think more clearly about, okay, what else do we need? You know, and talk to more teachers around the country. What else is missing in the pedagogy? I've gotten involved with a lot of other teachers who teach different styles, and it's been wonderful for me to connect with them and really open my eyes about different ways that the bass is taught all across our country.
Now, as if you weren't doing enough, you've also been a founding member of a couple of chamber ensembles, the Pittsburgh Live Music Chamber Orchestra and the innovative string quintet Gibbs and Main, which is based on two streets in Rochester. I understand that you have incorporated your love for tango as well with some of this.
It's true. I think the Gibbs and Main project predates my love for tango dancing, I'm pretty sure. That was really fun. That was a fun project I was involved in for about 5 years. Some friends and I got together, and we were just playing for fun, and we were playing at this bar that we used to hang out in. And I said one day, like, why don't we just play some tango arrangements here? And the cellist in our group is a wonderful Colombian man, and he started making arrangements for us, and this led us to this project to make our debut CD was a tango, all tango arrangements for string quintet. And we had a great time with that. It just came to the point after I had my first baby that I thought, I can't do this anymore. I have too much on my plate. I finally have to say no to something. But it was wonderful playing with them, you know, having regular rehearsals and being the only bass player and really having to work at the different kind of balance that there is when it's such a small group of players. It was a really great period of performance.
And people might be interested to know that you kind of have reached a crossroads in your career, unfortunately losing a substantial amount of hearing earlier this year. So I guess that means you're not quite sure what the future holds. What's in the plans at this point?
Yeah, I unfortunately have a disease in both of my ears that took all of the hearing on one side and most of the hearing on the other side. I'm not exactly sure. Once I recovered from the initial illness, I started tiptoeing back into teaching one student after another, starting with the ones that knew me the longest. And I was afraid that it wouldn't go well because my pitch perception's distorted now. But actually, my students have been very honest with me that it's been going fine, and I see them progressing. So at the moment, I'm really loving teaching, and I've created another pedagogy project. I'm writing a new set of etudes. They're etudes in disguise. I'm writing them as duets with funny snack food titles for beginners and intermediate level students. So I'm thinking like 5th, 6th, and 7th grade bass players. And I'm just thinking more broadly now about what it means to teach music if you don't necessarily hear it. So I'm not exactly sure. It's kind of an open-ended question right now. What's going to happen next? So I don't know. I'll have to get back to you on that.
Well, you know, Beethoven did it, so the sky is the limit for you, I know.
I think you're right.
That's Galen McCormick, who plays double bass with the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra in Rochester, New York.